Hey, welcome back to The Possibility Show. This is your host, Jovan, and I'm a business and life coach. So today, I have a coach as well as our guest. And I'm pretty excited because I've known this guy for several years now. And it's just, I don't know, like, I love meeting people that I can easily connect with. You know, he is a very friendly person. He has a mission. That's one thing that I really, you know, like about him. And not like in a mission, just let's say, for example, just to make money or, you know, create something, but a mission to really help other people, which is, you know, totally aligned to what I am as well. So, and you know, I love talking about finances, money, and all these things, because that's something that I worked on for many years in my life, because I had problems with it, of course. And so definitely, if you are into that, you'll definitely learn a lot from this episode and, you know, what it takes to become a full-time trader as well. So without further ado, let's all welcome Jonathan Lou Reyes.
Hi everyone. Thank you, Jovan, for inviting me here. My name is Jonathan. I'm a full-time trader here in the Philippines. And I've been trading for, I think, almost 10 years now, and I've been a full-time trader for around 7 years. I would say I also teach Forex with several entities and several groups as well. And I've been doing that for, I think, 6 years as well, 5 or 6 years, I think.
Mm, nice, nice. So for the benefit of the listeners, right? So could you share more about who Jonathan Reyes is besides what you do, right? Besides what you do.
Well, all right. Aside from FX trading and, you know, all that stuff, I am I'm a dad. I'm a father of my 1-year-old and a 5-month baby boy. And to be honest, I would say half of my time is kind of dedicated towards that, taking care of my baby, also my wife. And I do really enjoy those simple things. I do work out from time to time. I used to do a lot now, not as consistent as before. And I also enjoy cooking, to be honest. And I do try to cook different types of recipes. I'm not particularly that good at it, but I enjoy it nonetheless. So that's what I actually do on the side. Pretty simple stuff, to be honest.
Cool. I mean, at some point in time, I would like to try some of your cooking.
Sure, man.
Cool. Yeah. So I've known you since you were not a dad yet, right? So before you had a kid. So that's quite some time ago. And the journey that since then, that I've watched you and how you have grown and how you've grown your own community as well, was amazing. But before that, right? Before that, I know that you have started much earlier. So could you share more about your story, like how you came about, you know, being a full-time trader and you know, spending half of your time just taking care of your kid? That's amazing.
All right. It's more of when I started trading, actually, if we were to backtrack a little bit earlier with that, I had a couple of businesses before, and one of my main businesses was I organize sports events. That's what I used to do. Mm. Because in college, I actually graduated from sports science, which is kind of far from what I do now. And because of that, yeah, when I was in college, I used to do a lot of sports organization events and stuff like that. That's actually how I got by during college. I was pretty much paying for my own tuition. And so I used to do that with my friends. And when we graduated, we kind of turned it into a business. And from there, it was working great until such time that we worked with, I'm not going to name stuff, but we worked with a particular government agency.
Yeah.
And during that time, it, you know, I was very clean and, you know, I was very hopeful. Yeah. I mean, and I didn't know that there were like certain practices that were kind of normal for them, which shouldn't be. Mm. And because of that, I had a really rough time with them, and it ended up with actually them filing a lawsuit against me.
Wow.
And because I was doing the right thing. And I was like 21 years old, and you have like the government suing your you. Yeah. And you know, that was a terrible experience, to be honest. And because of that, that time I was also checking out what is forex trading, what is all of that online. So I was kind of doing it on the side. And from there, my friends and I just said, like, okay, let's stop this business. This is not looking great for us. Yeah. And from then, I just kind of moved on to forex trading. And I went through all the hype that everybody normally goes through. Like, you think that you'll be a millionaire with your $100 capital. And with that, you kind of lose a lot of money along the way. And from there, I kind of decided that, I really want this thing. So I want to learn as much as I can from forex trading. And I looked for local employment for any broker that actually offers that. And I got in and I told them, like, you give me any job, even though I just do cleaning or get you coffee or whatever, just teach me how to trade properly and, you know, how the business really works. And that's how I got in. And from there, it took me a lot of time, I think 3 years, to become actually consistently profitable. It was like a kind of difficult journey at that part as well. But after 3 years, I was already consistently profitable.
Okay.
Took a lot of time. So.
Before you continue with this story, I have two curious questions. So first is, you are very young and you are doing sports science and all. How did you get exposed into forex trading? You know, and then what made you think that, you know, that's something that you would like to do?
All right. I was exposed, to be honest, just through online ads. I was just kind of browsing through the internet and I came across this like online ad. Okay, what's this forex trading thing? And then after that, I kind of got a little bit of knowledge from it. I attended the local seminar here in the Philippines. It was, to be honest, very different from what forex trading really is. So I tried it out with them. I got like a demo account and I felt quite comfortable with how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I decided that maybe this is for me.
What attracted you to it?
Sorry, what do you mean?
What got you attracted? Like, what motivated you you know?
It's more of what really got me attracted was the amount of money that you can earn.
Okay.
With very minimal effort. For example, I used to do business, and for you to organize an event, it takes an enormous
amount
of
logistics.
To set it up, yeah, logistically everything, just to earn like something for the month.
Yeah.
And, compared to forex trading, when you actually trade and you do it right, you can actually earn the same amount just by, with significantly less effort.
Okay? Yeah. Compared to that.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not saying forex is easy. It's just, you know, significantly less tiring than waking up at 3 a.m. in the morning, buying supplies and, you know, organizing the event.
Cool. So the second question that I had is, or have, is, you had this mentality or mindset that, you know, you looked for a company involved in the forex industry, and then you mentioned that, okay, just give me any job and you know, as long as you just teach me how to do this right. And where did you get that kind of mindset? That's very curious, because you're so young, 21 years old, you know, like a lot of the young people now, the millennial, I'm not generalizing, of course, but from what I observe and hear is that, you know, like, okay, I'll look for a job and earn some money, you know, like that's the drive that they had. So that's a very different kind of mentality. So where did you get that?
I guess it was kind of built throughout when I was growing up, because when I was growing up, we weren't particularly like showered with a lot of money. I had to do a lot of things my own way and kind of really push myself with it. For example, when I was in high school, I wanted to play games, like online games. Online, it was like LAN games during that time. For example, I wanted to play like Counter-Strike, I want to play Dota, you know, all those good things when you were in high school. And I didn't have any money with that, so I had to, like, you know, always make a way for it. So what I did was that early in the morning, I go to a donut store and buy a couple of boxes of donuts. And then I go to school and actually sell those donuts to my classmates and, you know, people not even in my own class. They kind of knew me as the donut guy. So, I kind of sold those so that I could, you know, play these games. I didn't really have enough allowance with growing up. So in college, same scenario. I used to teach English when I was like early in college.
Yeah.
And that got me by. I was able to pay my tuition fees and everything. And at the same time, I was also organizing events, as mentioned earlier. So it's more of that kind of drive that it was kind of easier for me to push myself. Like, okay, I really want this. And, you know, putting out that much effort wasn't really difficult as, you know, as other people might think.
Yeah, I love that. What I got from what you just mentioned is that when you highlighted that your drive to when you want to achieve something and get something, there's this drive, right? And then the second thing is your resourcefulness. I think a lot of people, you know, like put down their resourcefulness, because what I believe is each and every one of us is, you know, resourceful, right? And it's just our beliefs that's holding us back. And you didn't have that limiting belief in you even when you were young. And so that's amazing. Okay, so let's go back to your story. And so now you went and worked for this company and you started learning. And then after 3 years, you started to see, okay, I'm actually quite profitable. You know, I'm good at this. Then what were your thoughts right after that?
Okay, right after that was more on how can I sustain this? Because it's more of how to solidify it further, how to sustain it more, and kind of protect it. Because I've worked on it for 3 years and I don't want to lose it. So I was more on that kind of mentality. I think that I'm not going to end here. I need to learn more. And for me to do that, I needed to connect with other traders. It was more of that type of thinking. I think that this is not enough. Okay, I need to secure this more. I need to make it better. And I need to connect to more people for me to do that. And that's basically when I was able to build an organization with that. It's just simply contacting other traders. Hey guys, what do you know about the market? Can you teach me a little bit about it? Mm-hmm. And I'll also teach you something in return. So it was more of that part.
So your main objective was to learn from other traders. Is that right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It was, to be honest, a little bit selfish. But at the same time, I also, you know, kind of wanted to give them something as well. Hey, I learned this for 3 years and you gave me something of value. I'll also give you something that I really valued for the past 3 years. So it was kind of more on that.
Mm, and is this organization PAFTI where we actually met?
Yeah. It's PAFTI, Philippine Association of Forex.
Okay, could you share more about PAFTI?
Okay. PAFTI is an organization that some co-traders and I built. It was very simple at the start. To be honest, the name of the group at the start was like Forex Trading Group. That's like super generic. And we were like a very small crowd and we just kind of shared whatever we learned in the market. Hey guys, try this out. This is my idea on the market right now. What are your thoughts on it? So we kind of exchanged a lot of ideas. And then from time to time, there were like new people coming in. You know, I'm interested in what you guys are doing. Can I join you guys and just kind of sit in and see what I can learn from you guys? And that's what we did. So we kind of, okay, sure, no problem. You can sit in. This is what we know. And then that person, you know, eventually gets better in the market, surprisingly, and learns more things than what we know and then shares it to us as well. It's kind of nice. And then from there on, it kind of grew into something more official. We had to make it a little bit more official because there were times wherein we were requested to travel to several areas in the Philippines. Like,
wow.
Okay, can you explain what Forex is? And there were like a couple of scams going on and we had to like debunk these types of scams. And whenever we go there, we were always asked like, who are you guys to say these stuff? Like, what authority do you have? Mm. And that's what pushed us to be a little bit more official than just like Forex Trading Group. Into Philippine Association of Forex Traders Incorporated.
Mm. So when you say official, you registered the group as well as an actual what do you call this, official entity in the Philippines, right?
Yeah, we're an official org association registered in the Philippines.
Cool. So I will switch a bit, right? In the topic, because you did mention about scams and, you know, all of this. And that's one thing, because I, for a brief for a brief moment, like in my lifetime. I did also venture into education in trading as well, specifically Forex, and that's how we actually connected, right? And how to say those, you know, when you have a garden and those weeds is just popping up, you know, this scam.
That's like the perfect description for it.
I know, right? Like you want to have a very nice garden, you know, have all these nice flowers blooming, but then you would have these like annoying weeds just popping up everywhere. And those are the scams, right? And so could you share, because this is one of your missions that I really like. And you know, your main market is Philippines, because there's a lot there as well. So could you share more about that?
Okay. Well, there's a lot of scams in the Philippines, to be honest, because people are not, it's rude to say not financially literate, but it's just, they're not aware of these things. Right. Mm-hmm. And, it wasn't taught in school. It's, there's no campaigns on it whatsoever. And because of that, it's very easy to, you know, to fall into these things as a, you know, as a Filipino, because you're promised these great returns, and being the Philippines, it's not so easy, you know, getting through day by day, and, you know, hearing these types of promises, like you earn this much money just by like putting a little bit of money in it and recruiting your friends. It's very enticing. Now, because of that, it's easy for scams to, you know, kind of pop up everywhere. So you would normally find these scams almost in every city in the Philippines. And surprisingly, these are more evident when you go to the provinces, okay? Because based on what I believe and what I've experienced, the main capital in the Philippines doesn't really have a lot of money, I'll be honest. Like people there really don't really, you know, have a lot of money, even though it's like the capital. But if you go to the provinces where the farms are, where the, you know, agricultural businesses are, that's where you actually meet the people who have a lot of money. And wow, you know, I've met people who store like hundreds of thousands of pesos, even millions of pesos. They store it in bamboo trees outside of their houses. Yeah, wow. I'm not kidding.
Seriously?
Seriously. Yeah. So you get those types of people who are very rich, and if you present these types of scams to them, it becomes very attractive, because they're not aware that these things are scams. And whenever they put money in, normally the scams do give you initial returns. Like you give them like a million pesos, and they would give you like 10%, 20% per month.
Yeah. Yep.
And because of that, you think that you're earning. And what you do is that you do recruit friends with you with your utmost best interest in them. You believe that this will be good for them. Okay. You're doing this in their best interest, to be honest. You're just being selfless here. And in return, you do get a little bit of commission if you do that. Most of the scams do that. And you refer it to them. And, you know, it kind of grows bigger and bigger with that. And when the scam falls apart, the people run away. What's left are the people who had genuine good intent for their friends. And, you know, they're left with all the blame and everything. So that's what usually happens here in the Philippines. And the numbers aren't small. I've met like... before Pafti, we went to Baguio City, and there was like 400 million missing there. I went to 400 million pesos. Okay?
Wow.
I went to CDO, Cagayan de Oro City, and there was like 800 million pesos missing there. So we're not talking about small amounts. We're actually talking about like really huge stuff here. So those are the types of scams that, you know, are very prominent in the Philippines. It's very easy to pop out because of low financial awareness.
Yeah, and I like how you put it, like the awareness of it, like, and that's why you and your team, your group is very, very committed into educating people like about all of this stuff. And one of the things that that popped up while you are sharing as well is because, you know, even here in Singapore or even in Malaysia, there's a lot of scams as well. In fact, I think, you know, not to really pinpoint, but I noticed and observed there's a lot of scammers in Malaysia, actually. You know, those big companies that scam people. But anyway, and one of the things that I really, how to say, distinguished from this one is people's psychology. When I talk about that is really greed, right? And even though they are financially literate, like people here in Singapore, because of greed, you know, when they start like, wow, easy money and I can earn a lot. And especially if people here in Singapore, they have a lot of money already, right? Because it's very well-developed, is prosperous. And just imagine earning like 20% in just one go, like in a month, is like crazy. Like, wow, I don't even have to sweat. So all of this is very enticing to them. And you know, the psychology part hijacks whatever you know and learn about all of these things, you know, like,
right.
So I think that's one of the biggest thing that people really need to look out for.
Exactly.
Yeah. And how's the mission going for Pafti in terms of educating people?
I think it's going better. It's going much better than before because at the start, to be honest, it was like super difficult. When we go to a place and there's like a couple of scams there, we do give like warnings. And sometimes what happens is that they are so influential there that they were able to turn things around. Like when we went there, we were the ones that were branded as scammers, which is crazy, right?
It's
kind of scary, to be honest. We kind of scared for our lives, to be honest, at one point in time. So that's how influential they were. But now it's much better. We do have more influence right in the market right now. For the past few years, we built it. So whenever we go to places right now, we're kind of on par with these entities already. When we do issue warnings, people now start to listen to it. And what's important is that they ask. I think that's one of the best differences now, because before they don't ask about it. Like when you give a warning, they just don't care. But now they do ask, like, why do you think it's a scam? They tell you, sir, I'm currently invested in these companies. I have a significant amount of money here. And you're telling us that it's a scam. Why do you think so? And I believe that's where it starts. Okay? Before, we don't have any of that. And now we get to have a platform where we get to explain why we believe these things are scams. And we get to differentiate real financial markets from these types of Ponzi's and pyramiding schemes. So that, I guess it's much better now because of that.
Yeah, so true, so true. Pafti has built a very good reputation and authority in Philippines. Not only in Philippines, even here in Southeast Asia, people know Pafti, right? And I like that because it really takes a lot of trust before people will listen to you, right? And because a lot of these people, once their money is in there, they become like truly advocates of these things, like just like what you said, because they experience it and with their good intention they invite other people into it, and not only that, defend it, right? Like correct, like they want to they might kill you for it, right? Like this company, and I will really mention this because they're really awful, JJPTR, right? And you know, there was a time we were campaigning, both Pafti and also our community were campaigning, to avoid this company. But those people who are already inside was like, no, they're legit. They're really arguing until the.
I had death threats with that.
Seriously,
I put out a video on YouTube. It has a lot of views. And there's like a lot of hate on the comments areas.
Oh my God.
And I had like personal messages after that, like threatening me and stuff. It was kind of nasty. And after all that, when the scam did fall apart, it's kind of hard for us to say that I told you so, because that they also lost a lot of money with that. And even though you kind of want to say it, it's not right.
I know.
Anyway, I remember that fight.
Yeah, man. But the thing is, like, for me, what I've learned as well through my journey and through meditation, through personal development, is that sometimes people really need to go through these things, right? Like, if they don't listen, they don't, at that point, right? And it's okay. We did our job in informing them, educating. Yeah. And if it still happens, they lose a lot of money. And, that's something there. They need to learn it, like, the hard way, right? The hard way. And I think based on my own experience as well, like, I'm not perfect or anything, but throughout my journey, I've struggled, failed, and to me, those were the learnings that I needed at that point, right? And so I think this is the same case for them. If they lose money, you know, they need to learn about it. Yeah. So exactly. Yeah. So this is a very good conversation about all of these scams. And if you are listening to this, you know, look out for it. You know, ask questions, just like what Jonathan was saying. So you've been teaching, you've been educating people about trading for a very long time, you know, like I think close to a decade or even more.
A little less than that.
Yeah, so about 9 years or something. And so could you share how is that journey like, you know, what were your struggles? What were your success throughout that journey? Okay.
All right. As a trainer, okay, as a teacher, it's very heavy. I would like to explain it, or rather, you know, say that it's a huge burden, to be honest, because when you trade by yourself, it's already a lot of burden on its own.
Mm.
Okay, you know, going against the market, learning about it, trading it, it's already, you know, heavy on its own. And if you translate that into education, it's much, much more difficult because it entails an entirely new set of skills. For example, if I were to teach FX to another person, the concepts that I've learned before are very complicated and very hard to learn. It took me years to learn that. And I have to teach that in a day or two, or sometimes even an hour or two.
Mm.
So it's more of simplifying all of these difficult concepts and being able to explain that in a very simple manner. It's a different type of skill set. So that is one of the difficult parts of teaching Forex. It's not only being good at the craft itself, okay, because you have to be good at it first before you can teach. And being good at it is already difficult. And teaching is again an entirely different set of skills. You have to be eloquent enough to explain it. You have to be able to simplify things. Mm. And at the same time, when you see that your students are learning, it's very gratifying. That's great. But if you do see them struggling and not learning, you do kind of blame yourself as well, because it is your burden. And with that, it's to be honest, very heavy. In addition to that, you also have like a lot of external factors. I don't normally pay attention to them, but sometimes it kind of gets to you. Like, for example, they say that very inconsiderate line, like if they don't, something like, you know, if they don't know how to do it, they just teach it. Okay, that's a very inconsiderate line. And I believe that's an insult to all teachers out there. Because
In fact, I was going to point that out.
Exactly. It's a terrible insult. And, you know, anything that you learn in life, you actually learned it from someone else. Mm. And if you do say that type of a line, it's like insulting that person that, you know, you learned from. You're not giving them value for what they gave you, okay? Yeah. It's, you're not being grateful for that. And, you know, that kind of gets to you sometimes, although I normally don't pay attention to it.
Yeah, but, it still gets to me, like, gets to me up to now. Like, you know, like, the reason why you're teaching is because you cannot make it. Like, what the?
You just bastardized all your teachers before. So it's more of those factors combined, and that's the burden of teaching. But at the end of the day, if you do see your you know, people you taught, they're able to apply it and they actually make money off of that and their life is better, it kind of erases all of that bad stuff away and you know, kind of pushes you to do more of it and do better next time.
But then, so I think me looking at the why people are saying that as well, right? It's probably they have experienced someone or a trainer that is really not good, or, you know, like maybe their intention is not good as well. So what can you say about those trainers, those type of trainers?
Well, I believe those trainers won't last long. It's like one of those weeds that come out. I would like, you know, it's something that they do, and whatever they teach, if it's not sustainable, it's gonna collapse. And I don't blame the people who say those inconsiderate stuff if they do experience trainers like that.
Yeah.
And it's part of the journey. Personally, I also experienced numerous trainers like that. I enrolled in a lot of expensive courses wherein I didn't learn anything, to be honest, and I'm not applying them any of their concepts today. And but at the end of the day, I wouldn't be here if I didn't enroll in those entities as well. So it's not something that I learned what not to do in the market. So it's more of that rather than what to do in the market. And so they're not going to last long. That's what I would say about those types of trainers.
That's a very good point of view. So what would you say would be, like, besides all of this inconsiderate comments, what would be like some of your other struggles as a trainer?
Okay, other struggles as a trainer, it's more of the number of increase and students that you have. Because initially I was only teaching like 10-20 students. It's okay to handle, it's fine. But when you go on a bigger scale, for example, the seminars that I have right now, you know, let's say in one go, I have like 300-350 people in one seminar. And that's only one city. And I get to do that again after 2 weeks, after 3 weeks. This was before the pandemic, right?
Of course.
Not now. But, I hit like 300-350 people. And you still want to deliver the same amount of quality that you would like to give, even though you're teaching one person or 300 people. And I guess that's one of the difficult parts, because it's a little bit taxing to, talk to them one by one, help them one by one. And that's something that I don't really have any solution up until now, because it's just the sheer amount of number.
True. And one of the things that I also learned along my trading journey as well is that each and everyone is different, right? Each and everyone is different. And even though we educate them with a certain system or tools or way to do trading, they will still have different results, each and every one of them. And so that's your main concern.
And that's why you have to like individually talk to them and help them one by one. You can't like, okay, here's a video for everyone, good luck. Okay. You can't really do that.
And I've watched you share a lot of content as well, like your own videos. You teach a lot of these things, and then you go from what you're saying, like 300 to 350 people in one go. And so what are like, some amazing stories that you have or you have received from all of these students or people that learn from you?
Okay. The stories are actually quite diverse. But the ones that I really liked are the people who actually came from these very expensive mentors that didn't really teach them any value. When they come to my seminar or when I get to talk to them and I teach them a couple of things, it's really nice to hear that an hour learning with you is more than what I learned with 5 days on this guy, and I paid this much, and you're not even charging me anything. It's more of that. It's like, it's super gratifying to hear those things. In addition to that, I also have a lot of people telling me that, you know what, I was trading for a long time now, and I was able to get it together after I was able to talk to you. And now they're being able to make consistent gains in the market. They're able to pay for, just the small bills at home. They're able to pay for the water bill or the electric bill from their trading account. And that in itself is, I've already achieved what I wanted to do. It's not for them to become billionaires or whatever. It's just for them to be able to pay everyday stuff with their own trading account. And that's a huge achievement for me already. So, and one of the last things that I do really like to hear, I hear it quite often, is that when I see their trading activity and I check their trading results, sometimes I get to see that they're already good traders in it on their own. But it's just more of the psychology and the habits that they have to, fix a little bit. And from there, they're already profitable traders. So I'm able to help them realize that you've already learned enough. You're already okay. It's just more of mastering yourself already. Like what you said before, meditation, thinking about what you're really doing and, making a little bit of a process out of it. It's just what they need. It's not learning new techniques in the market. It's just getting it together. So those are stories that I really love to hear.
This is one of the biggest things. I also went through that phase as well, like, you know, learning particular thing, and then instead of mastering it, like mastering ourselves as well, like, ooh, this doesn't work. Okay. Then you keep hopping into the next strategy, next tool. Yeah. And yeah, exactly. It took me like two plus years before I realized that, I cannot keep doing this, right? Because it's going to be forever, because there's like thousands and thousands of strategies and tools out there, and, you know, not even right. including different types of mentors and teachers. So when I realized that, okay, I just need to focus on one, and a lot about our own psychology, you know, and risk management. That's the biggest thing.
Exactly. One of the biggest.
The biggest thing. So, okay. So let's talk about, I think for some of the people who will be listening to this, they're probably thinking of, you know, maybe going full time, you know, as a trader, just like how you are. And maybe they idolize you. They want to be like you, right? Be like Jonathan, or like be like Mike or something. And so let's talk about that. So are there steps on how, you know, you can be a full-time trader?
All right. Yeah, there are a couple of steps. What I would like to discuss is more of an evolution of a trader. Like, what are the phases that you have to go through?
Cool.
And phase one would be an over-enthusiastic phase in the market. It's if you ask that for any trader, I'm sure that they would smile and tell you a lot about that. It's that phase is where you become a madman and just try to absorb everything that you can. You try to enroll in all the courses that you can. You trade a lot in the market. You risk very high. So that's phase one. Okay?
And to can I share my phase one?
Yes, please.
My phase one, I describe it being like a high school kid with a crush. Like, I cannot wait to, you know, to look at my charts, to open my computer and, you know, see my trades, you know, it's like that, like, wow, it's going to be like a new day. I'm going to see my crush, you know, something like that. So anyway,
and people just cannot not think about it. Right.
Exactly.
All the time.
That's
phase one. Okay. And that's all right. And phase one, you lose a lot of money on phase one. That's part of it. Phase two is when you get to realize that you're not good at it. That's phase two. That's where all the realizations come in, and that's where depression comes in. That's where all the despair comes in, and you kind of get to sulk a lot. You put a lot of hate out there, like, I hate the market. Like, you try to blame everything that's wrong. That's phase two, and you'll become very bitter, and that's all right. That's part of it. I did that too. I tend to blame everything I could. I blame the teacher. I blame the broker. I blame the market. I blame the news. I blamed everything. Okay, so that's part of it. And what you get to realize at the end of it is that you're not good at it, and you're still losing money. Mm. And at that point in time, when you realize that you're not good at it, this is the part that you've actually learned a lot of things early on, and the majority of the things that you've learned, you can already apply. It's just more of getting it together. So the key for you to move from step two to step three is to have basically for me, it's three things. Okay. Number one, it's to have a specific method on trading. Like what you said before, you're focusing on just one thing. Okay.
Yeah.
And focusing on one thing is very important, because you're now able to make that strategy work. Okay. If you test it out for a while and it doesn't work, you can change a couple of things with it. Okay, a certain aspect of this strategy isn't working for me. Why don't I try to add something here and remove something? And then you test it again for a while. So that is the very painful process of, you know, getting from step two to step three. And eventually,
hold on. Go ahead. What when you say test it for a while, like, how long is that?
Okay, testing it for a while is actually quite long. It's around, I would say, to be honest, around 2 to 3 months or up to 6 months.
Okay.
It's more of, it's not tied to a particular number of months, but it's more of testing the strategy in different market conditions. Like, you have like a crazy market right now with the pandemic, or, you know, before that you have a market where everything was just going up. you know, different types of market conditions. So if you're able to do that and it's working well, okay, you're able to profit from it consistently, not big, but just consistently is already okay. And you also add the number two, risk management, meaning whenever you lose a little bit of money, or rather when you lose a trade, it's fine. You can sleep at night. That's very important. And at the end of the week, if you had a terrible week, it's fine. It doesn't really hurt you that much. That's your benchmarks for risk management. Number three is trading psychology. It's just mainly you being able to stick to your plan. Like, this is your plan. This is your strategy. You're testing out for a few months. You know that it might not work, and that's fine. Okay. And at the same time, you have your risk management with you. Since you know that that strategy might not work, you should know that you can lose some money along the way. That's part of it. Exactly. And if you make money off of that, that's great. Okay. So that's trading psychology. You need those three things to get through phase two to phase three. Now, phase three is when you actually get to see that you're not losing money anymore. Okay. So it's not really profiting first, but it's just not losing money. That's phase three. If you're not losing money in the market, you're already in step three, and you're on your way to becoming a full-time trader already. And step three, you just continue part of step two, wherein you get to make your strategy better and better. You get to stabilize your trading psychology. You get to minimize your risk a little bit more. So it's more of the improving phase. Okay? But step three is where you don't really lose a lot of money anymore. You don't lose money. You're not earning, or you're earning a little bit, but it's not enough. That's phase three. Okay? And phase four is the final stage. When the market gets very boring, like when you are not very enthusiastic opening your charts anymore, it's just like, you know, you brushing your teeth, going to, you know, fixing breakfast, washing the dishes. If you feel like looking at the charts is something like that, you're on step four already. You're on phase four, wherein it's kind of clockwork for you. You open your charts, you check if there's opportunities. If you see an opportunity, you make a couple of trades. If you don't see any opportunity, you just go through your day. That's phase four. And when you're already there, you're already a full-time trader. Congratulations. You might not realize it, but that's what it is.
Cool. And I like that. I think I'm probably somewhere out phase three, but just a disclaimer as well. Like I've stepped like back in my trading journey because I'm focused on more of the psychology part and the coaching. So anyway, I like how you split it into these phases, right? And one of the questions that came up is there a way to cut down phase one, phase two, and, you know, have people, you know, start at phase three? Maybe not like immediately phase three, but, you know, get rid of phase one and phase two, not to experience that.
Okay. I don't think that's possible because I haven't really met anyone who hasn't gone through that. Some people got it a little bit shorter. Like, for example, I have like a handful of students that I do concentrate on right now. And phase one and phase two for them was a little bit quick. It was only around, I would say, 6 to 8 months. It was very quick. But that came in with a lot of guidance. Like, you really have someone behind your back, like telling you, okay, you have to focus on this one first. You have to focus on this one first. You show me your trade. All right, you do that alone. Let's see what happens. So it's a... You really need someone behind you to, you know, kind of scold you every day.
Kick your ass.
That. So that makes it possible. Yeah, kick your ass. Kind of, it makes the process faster, but I guess it really depends on the person because some people were able to do it like 6 to 8 months and some were able to do it like 1-2 years. So there's a lot of variables with it, but I guess it can make it faster, but we cannot totally cut it out.
Cool. I get it. So it's more of shortening it rather than cutting it, getting it out. And the main reason is probably because of the psychology of it. You know, people need to learn, you know, like to develop their psychology through this process, right? Cool. So like if I was, let's say, for example, someone in phase three and I am just focusing on improving, right? Like I'm not losing. So when we say not losing money, it doesn't mean that you don't lose trades, but overall, right? Overall.
keeping it steady, yeah.
Yeah, so if it's if you look at it as a business, at the end of your financial report, you are positive, right? Not right. in the red, right? So that's what we're talking about. So someone who is in phase three and I'm definitely improving, what would you say they need to really like focus on, like how they want to shift their mentality? Where do they need to focus on?
Okay. There aren't really any particular things that you can focus on since it varies per person. For example, I got to stage three because of this particular strategy and this particular risk management.
Mm.
So it could vary. Okay? And I believe that for you to push a little bit forward from stage three is to actually talk to several other traders who are already on stage four.
Okay.
So it's more of a personal learning level already. What do you need personally for you to get there a little bit more?
Like
because
that.
It depends on what you already have, you know, coming in from stage one and two, bringing things to stage three.
Mm.
Now, there might be a couple of things more that you can learn to push yourself to stage four. And for you to get that is to simply talk to other traders who are already there, and you might learn a thing for or two from them. And I believe that is also one of the things that pushed me personally when I had my, you know, peers, you know, learning from other traders as well, starting PAFTI early on. That is what really helped me move from stage three to stage four. It's more of learning from other people like, okay, you guys are already doing it this way. Why don't I try it this way? All right, I'll try to accommodate one of the things that you're teaching me. And okay, let's do that.
Mm.
So it's more of that part already.
And that's still being very mindful of, you know, those three things that you mentioned, like, you know, your
exactly.
method, risk management, and trading psychology, all of this is like your base, right? Your fundamentals.
Right.
And then adding more into it. Cool. And so how does PAFTI help people through these phases, by the way?
All right. Well, PAFTI has a lot of activities, actually. Number one, we have general lessons for stage one people, stage one and stage two, just for you to accumulate all that information. And we also have like special classes there that specifically talks about trading psychology, risk management, and how to go about it. So that would greatly help them stabilize, you know, all of those three aspects. Okay? That's our goal with that. Now, next is we also have our weekly analysis sessions. It's basically where the PAFTI people can come together and analyze the market together. So mainly the guy who's leading that is Mr. Alex Samson. And so he kind of explains, he has a lot of responsibilities. So he kind of explains what he thinks will happen for the market. And you know, initially, we kind of contribute with the analysis and everything, and he discusses it with everyone. And with that, people can ask questions like, why do you think so? And why do you think the market will go this way? Why do you think, how about, you know, the other way around? Can this happen, et cetera, et cetera. So it becomes an open venue where people can actually learn. And hopefully that will help them from stage three to stage four.
Mm.
So we're kind of tackling all these types of
phases.
Help.
This help. Okay.
Get right. Moving on from phase to phase. So that's what generally what we're doing in PAFTI right now.
Cool. And shout out to Mr. Alex Samson. it's a bit weird calling him Mr. Alex.
Mr. Alex Samson.
He's a cool guy as well. So he's one of the people that I met in PAFTI and became friends with as well, just like you. Cool, amazing. And I really love your work, you know, not only you, but PAFTI's work as well in helping all of these people who wants to go into trading. And so just to recap again, so there's four phases that you mentioned. Phase one is this, you know, giddiness, you know, like feeling all those butterflies.
Butterflies.
And, and very super excited about the market and all this. And then phase two is when you now experience, you know, the market hitting you hard and, you know, losing money and you become depressed, start blaming everything except yourself.
Exactly.
and then in order to you, what you mentioned, in order to get to phase three from phase two, is that first you need to really focus on that method, that one method that you want to really master and focus on. And then the second thing, having a very good risk management, system or whatever you want to call it, structure. And then the third thing is developing your trading psychology. So then once you had this tree, you move on to phase three, which is, you don't lose a lot of money, you become more consistent and all of this. And then from here, you mentioned to come to phase four is basically you become more like very objective, like there's no more emotions in it. And I, when you were sharing this earlier, the phrase that I was coming up to me is that, I got this.
Right. Exactly. That's the moment. That's like phase three moment. I got this.
Yeah, I got this. I don't need to worry about anything. I have everything set. I got this. It's like brushing your teeth. You don't have to think, how do I brush my, how many times do I brush here? You don't think about those things, right? So you already know you got it. So that's moving on to phase four. And I like what you shared. This one is, I think I need to really repeat and highlight, in order to get to phase four, just needs a little bit of tweak. And the best thing to do that is to ask people who are in phase four. Like look for these mentors or coaches. Broadly using the word coach, because I am a NLP coach, and so we have a specific definition about what coach is, and so a lot of people there are mentors because they teach what they've learned out there. So those are the things. Amazing stuff. So we're almost at the end. I have a few questions I would like to ask you, quick fire questions. But before we go into those quick fire questions, could you share if people want to get to know more about you or Pafti, what's the best way to do that?
I'm very,
very popular.
I'm always on social media. Yeah, I'm always on social media. So I have a Facebook page. You have Pafti's Facebook page. So it's a Philippine Association of Forex Traders Incorporated. There's also a Facebook group with that. They can, enter. And there's a lot of great discussion there every day. They can also follow me on Facebook. It's Forex Coach Jonathan Liu. I do post a lot of updates there from time to time. And Pafti also has a website. It's pafti.ph. Mm. So we're very easy to find.
So the main platform is Facebook, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I haven't checked, but how big is Pafti now?
Pafti right now is, I think, 15,000, 16,000 members.
Wow.
To be honest, it's not really as big as you think, because with other groups, they have 70,000, 100,000 people in there. But one of the reasons why we have a very small knit group, 15,000 is relatively small. It's because we actually handpick every person that comes in. You cannot get in and instantly. We have to actually check each and every profile that gets in, there's no troll accounts. Like if you just opened your Facebook in the past few months, you're not gonna get accepted. It has to be it's really you. We actually check your wall before we actually accept you. And there's a couple of questions before you enter. So that's one of the reasons why whenever you enter the group, it's relatively clean. You won't have people there posting a lot of ads and annoying stuff. We actually delete it as soon as we can. If there's any, we automatically kick the person out.
Yeah.
So, to remain true to the goal of the group.
Okay, I like that, because I'm part of the Pafti Facebook group. So we experience all the drama, all the Oh man. Yeah. So if you are someone who wants to just learn and be true to trading and sharing of what you've learned, all of these things in a quiet, peaceful Facebook group, then Pafti is a group to join, man. Yeah. Cool. All right. Are you ready for your quick fire questions?
Okay. I'm actually, I'm a little bit nervous. All right. Let's go.
Nah, that's fine, man. Okay, cool. So the first question is, what are one or two books that made a huge shift in your perspective in life?
Okay. Well, actually, the books that are, it's actually very different. It's number one. It's weird, but I believe it's important. Laws of Power is very
Laws
important.
Laws of Power.
Laws of Power. Yeah. And number two, same author. It's actually The Art of Seduction.
Ooh, I heard of The Art of Seduction.
Yeah, yeah. It's both by Robert Greene, and I believe it's a good read for everyone. It's not really much about trading, but it's more about how people behave in general. Okay, how to communicate with people in a good way and in a dark way. So knowing those things would actually be very useful, because whenever I talk to people, I talk to different brokers, legal entities, and everything. Mm. Because of those two books, I'm actually able to identify the good types of communication and the bad types of communication. Mm. So it's a little bit different. But I believe those two books kind of changed a lot of things about me. Cool. Very different from financial markets, but trading psychology-wise, I think it's quite
very useful. Cool, cool. So second question, what's an unforgettable failure that created an unexpected opportunity or success?
Okay, I believe that it would be failing at the story that I mentioned earlier, failing at the events organization thing, and being sued by the government and paying a huge amount of money just to, you know, them not to sue you. That's a huge failure in my end. And it turned into something very nice, because back then I couldn't go back into sports anymore. I was kind of sick of it. And because of that, it turned me into the market, which is actually doing very well for me right now.
Nice, nice. Next one. What is one of your most worthwhile investments that you've ever made? So this can be anything, right? Like not just talking about really, really investments, but it can be anything.
Okay. My worthwhile investments, it sounds a little bit cheesy, but it's actually the PAFTI team. It's more of, it's a lot of investment on at the start, because you're already trying to learn as much as you can. You're trying to be better. And at the same time, you have to handle a whole community. And it's very difficult, because, you know, you have, you know, people fighting everywhere. You have all these unnecessary things about the group that you have to handle and balance. So my investment on time and effort there is a lot. Mm. And I believe that it's very worthwhile, because it is, you know, a huge part of who I am right now.
Yeah.
And it's actually what's helping me propel further into what I actually want to achieve in the future. So it's actually a very big investment for me, cool. Worthwhile investment.
You do have a great team, you know, like not just in terms of working on PAFTI, but they're amazing people as well. I've met all of them.
Exactly. The team I'd love to mention.
Yeah, cool. Go ahead.
I have all good things to say about them. Yeah.
Sure. All right. If you can travel back in time and only meet your 15-year-old self and give one advice, what would it be?
Buy gold. Buy gold, man.
Oh, buy gold. Man. Like, this is kind of like Back to the Future thing, man. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, but seriously, it's... to be honest, I don't have any. I always thought about that. You know, if I go back, what would I tell myself? I would probably say to myself, You'll be fine.
I don't actually have
any advice, because if I gave myself advice before, I don't think I would be here. And failing a lot and, you know, struggling a lot, that's what made me who I am. And I don't want to take that away from that guy 15 years ago, or, you know, 15-year-old me. So it's just, you'll be fine. That's probably what I would say.
Yeah.
Aside from buy gold and buy out.
I think anything you will say when you're 50, you know, like during that time, buy anything, buy Jollibee, buy.
Exactly, we'll probably go up.
Yeah, probably go up. So cool. All right, next question. What makes you feel alive?
What makes me feel alive is my baby boy. Before it was the market, like, you know, being on your laptop like 2 a.m. in the morning, waiting for the interest rates of the U.S., that's what kept me alive. but now it's actually not very, not like that anymore. It's more of my kid. It's more of family. The small things that I actually appreciate now. And to be honest, I love being a trader, a full-time trader, because it enables me to do things that not a lot of fathers are able to do right now. You know, if you're a working dad, I'm sure you're busting your ass off just to be able to provide for your family.
Yeah.
And most of the time, you won't be there when your kid wakes up. And to be honest, that in itself is, that keeps me alive. That keeps my blood running, waiting for my kid to actually wake up. And, you know, nice. First thing that he sees is me. And, you know, I have to, like, change his diaper and, you know, give him milk, give him breakfast. That's golden for me.
Nice.
And, yeah, that's what keeps me alive now.
Nice. And we always talk about and educate people or those who want to go in trading anyway, that these are the benefits, right? The freedom, the time to do the things that you want. And the only question is, are you willing to be committed to that journey, right? To reach that point?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that for everyone, it takes a lot of commitment to get to stage four. And it's not going to be an easy journey, because normally you would hear online ads, you would hear a lot of mentors telling you that it's Forex is easy, you just do a couple of clicks, don't do this and you'll be fine. You know, it's
bullshit.
It's just absolutely not true.
So
committed for that. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Next question. What's your proudest moment in life?
Okay, my proudest moment in life would also be one of the things that I discussed earlier. It's more of being able to turn new traders into profitable traders. Mm. Not actually new traders, but traders who were, you know, weren't profitable before into profitable ones. And my biggest achievement was actually turning them into better traders than I am. So I actually have a couple of traders who are now, I hate to say it, but they're better than I am. They make a lot of money more than I am. They can manage the risk better, and they're doing much better, to be honest, in trading. And they spend less time analyzing the market, surprisingly. And I believe that's my greatest achievement. I'm kind of envious, to be honest. I mean, I'm human. but I believe that's my greatest achievement. Them being better than I am, that's the best thing that could happen to someone who's teaching.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like you know, those senseis, those master teachers, right? And once you see your student become better than you, then I think, yeah, I totally understand that. One of the things I think I forgot to ask as well is how important it is to have capital. Because you just mentioned, you know, someone they're earning a lot of money. And I think there's a perception that, you know, if you want to earn a lot of money, you can... In Forex, you can at least start at a small amount. But if you really want to have a sustainable, you know, good income from trading, like, how important is it to talk about capital?
Okay. Capital is very important, because always remember, I always say this, think of returns relative to your capital. Mm. So that's what I usually say. So if you have $100, don't expect a million from it, because it's $100. So think of something like 2 to 3 or 5% a month. Actually, 5% a month is phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people would think that, you know, that's small. No, that's actually phenomenal. If you're doing consistently 5%, investment bankers would actually hire you on the spot.
Yeah.
And you know, that's how big that is. And if you're able to profit like 2-3% or 5% on a good month, that's already okay. So if you have $100 with you, that's like what? $2, $3 a month. So yeah, capital is very important. So it's okay to have a small capital at the start if you're at stage one, stage two. And when you're already at stage three, that's where you actually can start to put in a little bit more capital, like, you know, increase it from time to time before you get to stage four. But whenever you're still in stage one or two, try to have a capital that doesn't really keep you up at night. And that could be different for everyone. I mean, for some people, that could be $100. For some people, it's okay for them to lose $1,000 because that's small to them. It's really up to you. Something that wouldn't keep you up at night. Yeah. That's a good capital.
Yeah, it's good that we talked about that. I almost forgot that. That's something very important. So final two questions. What does success look like to you?
Okay, success looks like it's actually having a goal and hitting it. Okay, that's actually success slash happiness for me. It's like setting a goal and you know, hitting that. So let's say that initially my goal was to simply be a profitable trader, and I hit that. That's success for me, and I'm happy about that. And after that, I set another goal. So for me, that is success. It's actually having a goal and, you know, hitting that goal. And it might take a lot of time. Right now, my goal is a little bit, my previous goal was actually to be the best trainer in the Philippines. And it took me a lot of years to get there. And surprisingly, I was able to hit that.
Yeah.
And my goal right now is a little bit more ambitious. I want to be one of the recognized, not to be the best, but one of the recognized trainers here in Asia. Okay.
Nice.
It's a difficult goal. There's a lot of great people out there. And just to be recognized as one of them, that's my next goal.
Nice, nice, cool. And although you mentioned this, I'm still going to ask it. What does happiness look like to you?
Happiness looks like, you know, hitting goals. And aside from hitting goals, it sounds cheesy, I know, but it's really my kid and my wife and my family. And being able to provide for them now and giving them a good life, that for me is happiness already. Enjoying the little things in life, like, you know, giving your kid the bath. It's actually quite enjoyable. You know, taking your wife out for dinner or shopping or taking your family abroad, or, you know, giving your parents what they like. You know, those simple things, it for me, that's happiness. And I'm able to do that now. And, you know, that feels great.
Nice. Thank you very much, Jonathan. It was a pleasure. I learned a lot as well. And I hope I'm sure that the listeners learned a lot from your sharing as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jovan. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Thank you.